You're listening to Slay Away, where we dissect horror films, the true events that inspired them, lore, gore, and every kill in between. Today, we're excited to have with us the director of Black Mold, currently making its festival circuit, John Potta. He is a filmmaker based out of Wisconsin and the owner of Head Trauma Productions. He actually went to school for graphic design, but he decided to make his first short film during his last year of college. And when he graduated, he started a screen printing shop that he co-owned for about 2.5 years before selling his share of it in 2010 to help fund his first feature film. Since entering the world of filmmaking with no formal training or education, just his strong DIY ethics, Potta has been an editor, producer, and co-writer, and post-production supervisor. He finally returned to the director's chair to helm Black Mold, which premiered at Panic Fest 2023. Potta's work has been screened at festivals all over the world, including the Fantasia International Film Festival and Fantastic Fest. Currently, Black Mold is making its debut at Fright Fest in London. Black Mold is a psychological horror that follows Brooke, played by Agnes Albright, and Tanner, played by Andrew Bales, a pair of photographers who, while exploring an abandoned, decrepit building, encounter a squatter who causes Brooke's memories to resurface, causing her to face off against her traumatic past.
Sometimes in life, you get dealt a hand you don't know how to play. Sometimes someone gets an idea in their brain. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. An idea on its own can be more than enough to make it real.
It's okay to cry, little star.
Black Mold is Potta's second feature film, and the team behind The Stylist, Revealer, and Brooklyn 45, which can be screened on Shudder, produced the film. We met John during the film's premiere at Panic Fest, where it won Best Indie Feature Film and Best Actress Awards. We're so excited to have John here with us to talk more about Black Mold, and we're excited for his premiere. He's currently in London. Welcome, John.
I'm going to have to just kick things off with this shameless plug, but I edited Anthony's newest feature, which is in post-production right now, called Frogman. So Frogman should hopefully be hitting some festivals later this year. So perhaps keep an eye out for Frogman.
Yes, Anthony Cousins. We actually just spoke with Anthony for an interview about Scare Package 2 and his short film. So that's exciting. You also edited The Stylist, right? And that's on...
Yes,
is that still on Shudder or it's on Arrow?
I believe it's on
streaming right now.
Both, because Arrow released it, so it should be on Arrow Stream or Arrow Player full time, but I do believe it's still on Shudder. I'm terrible. I should keep up with if it's still on there.
Yeah, some of my favorites I've got... I always have to have Arrow, Shudder, and Screambox for my subscriptions at all times.
It's a good time to be a horror fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of great like genre and yellow films on Arrow, so that's one big thing if that's something you're interested in.
Most definitely.
Tell me about Cannes. How was the experience? I know you just went last week.
Well, I actually didn't go, unfortunately.
But the film went.
Yes, the film went. And actually, I have not heard back from Raven Banner yet. And I know it just ended. And so I was assuming this week was them probably getting back and getting into the office. And so I was going to reach out to them next week. But I know we were in the print magazine. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the official magazine that goes out for the festival, and we had a little write-up in there, and I got photos of that, which is kind of surreal and weird to think about. And yeah, I don't know. I still don't think I've really allowed myself to process that it was taken there. So I'm just sitting back.
And so this isn't your first time that you've directed a feature, but was it your first time writing the script?
No. So in 2012, I co-wrote and co-directed a really no-budget feature called Deadweight. And then in 2018, I co-wrote and produced Gags the Clown, which was a feature that was directed by Adam Krause. So this is technically my third time writing a feature, but it's my first time writing solo and my first time directing solo.
Okay, cool. Well, can you tell me about, you know, your first break in the film industry? Was filmmaking always an interest that you had?
I was always interested in film as a kid. I discovered Jaws when I was 6, and then my parents started that conversation with me about how like the shark wasn't working and all that stuff. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? The shark doesn't working. There was a shark in the movie. And they're like, well, yeah, it wasn't a real shark. They had to make it. And then my mom bought me the Jaws log, which was, oh my gosh, what is the producer's name? Peter Gottlieb? The producer, it was a diary of his that had a lot of pictures behind the scenes and stuff like that. And that was my introduction to the world behind the camera. To me, films had always been about what was in front of the camera. And then to think that there was stuff behind the camera and that people got paid, or I didn't even think about people getting paid, but I was like, people got to do this? People get to make monsters and creatures and fun? And so as a kid, my best friend and I would make a lot of backyard movies. And, you know, we made like Night of the Living Seizure People was the first one we made. And then we made Night of the Living Seizure People 2, Shake, Rattle, and Die, which really terrible, stupid movies when you're...
Fantastic name.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we did those when we were in middle school. We also had Dance Party Slaughter was another one. And Jaws 1999, which we made in 1999.
That after Jaws 3?
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. Yes. Yes, it was.
I can't remember exactly when The Revenge came out, but I think it was in the 90s.
And, you know, I got to give a little plug to Jaws 1999 because it was pretty good. We shot half of it. We shot half of it in a pool with a toy boat and a toy shark and like G.I. Joe figures. And then that would be like our wides. And then anytime we went into close-ups, it was he and I sitting in a boat in a garage pretending we are on the water. Oh, yeah, that was great filmmaking right there. But when I was in college.
Ultimate in DIY.
Yes, yes, very much so. Very much so. I went to college for graphic design, and film was always...
Oh, me too.
Oh, right on. Small world. Yeah, film was always on my mind. And my senior year of college, I decided to make my first short film. And this was in 2006 when we shot it. And it was called Better Off Undead. And it was just... It was once described as if a Kevin Smith movie had zombies in it. And it was really just my friends and I just kind of doing what we did normally, which was just hang out, act really stupid, and watch zombie movies. But then in this film, zombies actually did show up. So I made that with my friends, and we really didn't have any intention to show it to anyone. It was just something we wanted to do for ourselves. But then in making a zombie movie, you obviously need extras. And so more and more people were getting involved. And then it just kind of became, it felt like something we should do. Like, well, we should show this. We should do something with it. So at the theater on campus where I went to college, we had the public premiere of it. And we sold out 2 screenings of it. And that was kind of like, oh, this is interesting. So then I started taking it to horror conventions and doing some small film festivals. And that was just really fun and satisfying. And it gave me this rush of just like, holy shit, like you can make something and then take it around and meet people I would never meet otherwise and have these really great experiences, which led me to want to keep going. So in a way, I got into filmmaking kind of on a fluke. And right after college, I started a screen printing shop that I was a co-owner of, because that's what I really wanted to do, was just screen print. And while having that screen printing shop, my first employee, who's a longtime friend of mine, Adam Bartlett, we just started working together and we started talking about stories. And then we ended up coming up with our idea for what became Dead Weight, the feature that we co-wrote and co-directed together. And things were going really great at the shop, but I wasn't really satisfied with my business partner, and it was really frustrating. And I hit a point where I wanted to get out. So at the end of 2010, I sold my screen printing shop to fund the first film that we made. And that was Dead Weight. And yeah, ever since then, film's been the focus. So I guess that was a really long-winded answer. And I think
I mean, it's interesting because I have a huge interest in film, but I was like, how do I transition a graphic design degree to the film industry? And I mean, I graduated almost 10 years ago now with my bachelor's, so I don't know where it goes from there. But I didn't get into, writing in the podcast till 2021. So
yeah,
I never know.
But I guarantee your design lends really well to the writing end of the podcast, because
if you've ever seen the Instagram, that's all me.
exactly. And that's the really interesting thing, is that I feel like in some ways, and obviously I can't say this definitively, but in some ways my design degree is benefiting more in the film world than if I had a film degree. because I can offer a different aesthetic. Like, I know how to do this. I don't have to outsource or hire anyone. And realistically, it just saves a bunch of money that I can just put so much of the design work together myself. So, yeah, it's pretty
multiple
good.
Benefits.
Exactly.
Kind of got your origin story in terms of how you discovered horror. But I like to ask, do you have any horror, thriller, or science fiction films that make up your favorites right now, or something that was kind of a horror film that you've always been kind of in awe of?
Well, Jaws and Ghostbusters were my first two loves when I was a kid. And I would say that those definitely steered me to the genre side of life. And I grew up watching a lot of horror because my dad was really into sci-fi, and obviously, sci-fi and horror are adjacent to each other. So I watched a lot of sci-fi and watched a lot of horror. But when I was 10, Sam, who is my childhood best friend that we made, Night of the Living Seizure People together, we saw The Evil Dead for the first time. And that just completely changed my life and blew my mind. And so much of the horror that I had seen up until that point was more the mainstream studio horror. And then to discover The Evil Dead, and even though I didn't know that it was nothing but friends grabbing a camera and going out in the woods and making something, I couldn't have articulated that, but I think I felt that. And then from Evil Dead, then I got turned on to Peter Jackson. And at this point, Lord of the Rings didn't exist, because this was 1994, 1995.
Okay, but The Frighteners is one of my favorite films.
Yeah,
yeah. People never talk about it, but it's so good.
Yeah, absolutely. And so seeing early Peter Jackson movies like Bad Taste and Dead Alive, I mean, we could not stop watching those movies when we were young. So those still in a way just completely floor me. But John Carpenter's The Thing. I mean, that's
on my favorites list. That and Alien are my two top.
Definitely.
Films. And part of it is I'm big into creature features.
Sure.
I got into horror through a creature feature. It was actually Silver Bullet.
Oh yes. Oh, I mean, we could talk Stephen King for days if you want. But with The Thing, and it's not just the special effects and everything, because of course, I mean, those are just nothing has ever really touched those. But when I look back at all the movies that I've written, I can't help but realize how influential The Thing is. Because the thing that, pun intended, the thing I love about The Thing is that dynamic between the humans and the uncertainty and the you don't know who to trust and just kind of like that paranoia that sets in. And
well, that certainly translates to Black Mold.
yeah. And so I think like that really, and the dynamic of when there's the outside force, if you will, or the danger exists within a group dynamic. I mean, that even goes back to the Evil Dead. But I love movies like that, and I love those type of stories. So yeah, the thing, and just recently, I'd say probably The Nighthouse is the movie that still just like sticks with me. I saw that in the theater. I think that was in 2022.
Was that
2021?
I don't know when it. The premiere was in 2021 because I saw it right after Popcorn Frights.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
But I think the theater release was technically 2022.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and that's one of my favorite horror films of recent years that I saw. I didn't know what to expect. I was a huge fan of The Signal when that came out in 2007. So I've kind of been keeping up with Bruckner. And man, that movie just creeped me out. And it was just so, so fascinating.
So like a decaying body in a rural field, the abandoned buildings scattered across the country decay, rot, and decompose, and they're eaten away by bacteria and fungi. So you employ this setting to explore trauma and fear. And so I want to know what inspired Black Mold's story and your use of abandoned spaces, because I've always found that they convey a sense of isolation and anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest influence is really that exploring and photographing abandoned locations is something that I do. And I find them truly beautiful. And I've said this to people before, and I've always gotten kind of weird looks, like, absolutely, seeing the sunset in front of a mountain range with like a lake in front of you, that's very beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But an abandoned building that has all the texture and layers of paint and holes in the walls and broken history. Windows. Yes, I just find that so gorgeous. And in photographing these buildings, you know, it's so hard as a filmmaker. You go into so many locations and you think of stuff cinematically. And while exploring these buildings, you know, I think about like, gosh, like, I should put these on screen someday. I love this stuff. And then allergies play a smaller part in Black Mold, but I also have very strong allergies. And one day while exploring an abandoned location and fighting off my allergies, the idea started to kind of come together. And it was also at a time that I was just having a really strong struggle with my mental health and being aware that my thoughts were my biggest enemy. They were the villain in my life. And I wanted to essentially make a movie that reflected that, where most of the time our biggest threats really are internal. And I think as a creative as well, you know, like they always say, you're always your worst critic, and it's even more so than that, like imposter syndrome and just like being down on yourself. And
well, they also say you are your own worst enemy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so that's like the really loose like inspiration behind it. But then in fleshing out the story, well, and then it's also my dad died when I was 20, and you know, at the time in 2016, when the idea for Black Mold came to be, a lot of this stuff, my mental health, my acceptance of my dad's death, and I just was really surfacing. And when I started to kind of piece this story together, I realized that there was a duality that existed between the settings and what the character of Brooke would be going through and facing off. So it just seemed like it was the right setting for the type of story that I wanted to tell.
I really, really love the opening shot of the film with that tracking shot down the suburban, you know, neighborhood, and as it just flows into the house. And now what I did notice is that the house, when you first get in, it's an abandoned building, but until you get into that room
Correct.
Where Brooke and her father are. And I was like, I can see this. I don't know if everyone's going to pick up on it, but it's really interesting. And I love that you did that.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's definitely something we wanted to achieve is it to be a little subtle. Like, you know, I hope people do realize that the interior of the house does not match the exterior. And that was also the other thing that we really wanted to drive home with the office in which we find young Brooke, is that that looks like what you would expect the inside of the house to be, but everything else, not so much. So I'm glad you picked up on that. Thank you.
Well, I think what's interesting is essentially it's like a nightmare that Brooke's having. Then mm-hmm. she wakes up and we're brought into the present. But if you look at sort of the decay as you enter the house, it's almost how we think of memories, right? Like you can never fully piece a memory together. There's decayed spots within your
right
memory. And that's also kind of something you can pull from that as well. And I'm only just thinking about that now as I continue to think about the film and watching it twice. That's another interesting way to look at it. Not just the, as your mind could decay, but the those blank spots in your mind also from trauma, like we black out a lot of things mm-hmm. from traumatic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while the film certainly explores the effects of trauma, I felt that exploring fear was a really focal point throughout the film. Mm-hmm. So during the first act, Tanner, played by Andrew Bales, he delivers this really exciting hypothesis about fear as he and Brooke are exploring a rural, you know, abandoned house. And he says, I don't know why they're called irrational fears. I have to imagine that most people have a reason to be afraid of whatever it is that scares them, even if that fear is foolish, perhaps unwarranted. Something at some point must have happened to influence it, thus making it rational and not irrational. And I just feel like this was so interesting. It's this really brilliant sort of line that sets up the rest of the film. And in a sense, he's also sort of speaking to Brooke's experience. Can you, you know, speak any further to Tanner's ideas about fear?
Well, again, at the time in which that the story came to be was when I was in the depths of some pretty bad struggles with mental health, but I was also aware of what was going on. Like, I was feeling really negative and I was feeling really down, but I realized that so much of what I was feeling was kind of like a waterfall effect from previous experiences in my life. And so it is this idea more so of, and you know, I started therapy at the end of 2016. And so I was on this journey of really trying to get to the core of my depression and my anxiety and in some ways my fears too. But going back and figuring out where all of these negativities kind of stem from is what led to that line. And like just really like assessing my life and talking with other friends, and you talk about stuff that people are afraid of, and you realize like whatever your fear is, there is something that started that. And, you know, like, I'm afraid of deep sea water. Why am I afraid of deep sea water? Well, because of seeing Jaws when I was 6 years old and thinking that a shark could get me. And so even though I live in the Midwest and I don't ever have to be around deep sea water on a regular basis, I still have a fear of it. And in some ways, it doesn't necessarily, I don't want to say it doesn't make sense, but it doesn't really apply to my day-to-day life. But, you know, then you just backtrack and you realize where it comes from. And again, I think it's just this idea of like that our brains, unfortunately, usually they work against us on a very regular basis. And mm-hmm. that stems from fear as well. Like that is tied into fears.
Supposed to be like a defense mechanism. Fear is supposed to sort of help you, but it can also be really crippling, because then if you, it's a fear that that triggers anxiety, especially me. I'm a perfect example.
Yep.
And it holds you back from a lot of opportunities, because it's easier to just not push through the fear in a moment where, you know, it could be at the other end of that is an incredible experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's a big part of that conversation in the film, and the kind of the motivation behind it too, is this idea that, like you said, like fear is supposed to be a defense mechanism, but then anxiety takes over, and then that is what really gets in the way. And like you're saying, it can prevent you from potentially really good experiences or trying something new or discovering something about yourself. But we often, and I'm as guilty of doing it too, but we will avoid certain things or will deny ourselves something because of anxiety that is also tied into fear.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that Black Mold's like small cast, there's like three people. Well, excuse me, four people, because Kato's there as well, briefly. So they deliver these really great performances that felt like very authentic, and it was frightening. What was the atmosphere on set like?
It was cold. You know, it was definitely.
Well, where
cold.
Did you shoot?
We shot in Central Illinois. We shot outside of Champaign, Illinois, primarily in a small town named Rantoul, and we shot in March, and usually it's like a high of like 55, 60 degrees, but that year it was not. We shot in March of 2022, and I think like most days it was like 40, 45 degrees, but then we shot in actual abandoned locations as well, and most of them did not have windows. So there's no shield from the really strong winds, and Central Illinois is flat with no trees. So the winds were super intense, but the buildings also retain the cold from the winter. So there was one day that it was like 60 degrees outside, but I think inside the building that we were shooting, it was like 22 or 23 degrees. So, but I mean, that was not a good answer to the question. The vibe on set and everything was just fantastic. I mean, this group of people that came together to make the film, truly amazing. And I have been working with a lot of these people since a short film I directed called Pity in 2013, which then that group has gone on to work together in multiple things. We made the stylist short film together, which then we made the stylist feature together. We made Revealer together, Brooklyn 45. You know, so a lot of the crew members have worked together and are friends already. And we've been friends. So there's such a positivity. And then we really lucked out with Agnes Albright, who played Brooke, and Andrew Bales, who played Tanner. This was really our first time working with them. And Jeremy Holm, who plays the man upstairs, was on Brooklyn 45, which we shot in December of 2021. And so there had been relationships formed already in Kato, AC, obviously, from Revealer. But everybody got along.
That's another favorite of mine. Yeah. I talked to Luke and Tim, and I'd been a big fan of Tim for a long time.
Yes.
Last year, I think, when the film came out, I love Revealer.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Super fun. And that was, you know, I was post-production supervisor on Revealer as well, and same producers and director of photography and production designers. And, you know, so we really kind of have been carrying over. But in shooting Black Mold, we're in small town Rantoul, Illinois. Everyone was staying at this Holiday Inn. When we would get done shooting, we would all go back to the hotel and we would have dinner together in the conference room. And on the weekends, everybody was hanging out. So the vibe on set was just so positive. Andrew Bales is absolutely hilarious. And I mean this in the most endearing way. You cannot get that guy to stop talking. And it's great because he's just full of life and energy. So because of him, everyone was always just laughing and having fun. So it was what we needed, because shooting in real abandoned locations provides plenty of challenges, and it's not glamorous by any means, but so much positivity, so much happiness, and so much laughter, which is very, very key to me. I don't just want the film to be as best as possible. I want the experience of making it together to be as best as possible for everyone.
Well, I know you read my review and that I loved Tanner.
Yes.
And I don't know why his character stuck out the most to me. Maybe I saw a lot of similarities.
Sure.
He sort of resonated. Like, I saw that in Brooke's character as well, and Agnes was fantastic, but I don't know what it was. Tanner? I just loved Tanner.
Well, you mean, you know, he, that character,
and a lot of the funny stuff came from Tanner.
I was gonna say he gets some of the good laughs, and then they also, you know, get to go through some more interesting scenarios, and so
I would say one of the scariest scenes in the film, Tanner, is one of Tanner's. I don't want to spoil it,
cause right?
It's really, really good. It's super frightening. And yeah, it was great. You're gonna have to go watch Black Mold when it's available. But I also really loved the set designs. So not just the abandoned buildings, obviously, but that dust and mold effects and kind of this like creeping black mold. And to me, just like the creeping fungi taking over something, it also kind of represents the growth of fear and suspicion. And in that bathroom in particular, where Tanner and Brooke become locked in as we kind of transition to nightfall all of a sudden.
Well, the bathroom that they wake up in, and then the room where the man upstairs is on the other side of the door, which we just referred to as the den. And though that was a set that we built. And that was our production designer, Sarah Sharp, you know, took the lead on that. And we had an incredible construction team led by Dustin Hoke and a whole bunch of set decorators and painters that was amazing to see that come together. And because of the importance of that room and some of the physicality that came about later in the film in that room, and also the rain, I just knew that I didn't want our actors to be rolling around on the ground and laying face first on the ground in an actual abandoned location, because even though we cleaned so many of the locations, you don't know what's on the ground in these places. And so I brought it up to the producers right away that if it was possible to get a set built for this, just for our actors' well-being, but also so that we had full control of everything in these rooms because they were so significant, that would be ideal. And the first day walking onto that set, I was just like, I can't believe that this exists. This exists because of some dumb idea that came out of my brain. This doesn't seem right. But yeah, Sarah Sharp and all of the art team really, really killed it. And shout out to Tiffany, who was set decorator, who put a bunch of holes in walls with me throughout all these locations too.
Oh, did you get to do some demo?
Oh, that was, yes, we did. And I took full advantage of that, where we'd get a shot set up and then I was like, ah, this would look so much better if there was a hole in that wall. Well, because we shot in real abandoned locations, there was nothing stopping us from putting holes in walls. So almost, I don't want to say every time you see a hole in the wall, but if there's a hole in the wall in a shot, I would say it's a 90% chance that myself or Tiffany put that hole there. It was fantastic. It was also,
I feel like I need to count the holes the next time that I walk and just be like, yeah, okay, a little bit there. Oh, that's a good looking one. Good yep. job, guys.
Yep. It was also a really good way to release some energy as well. Just, there's a crowbar. Tiffany actually gave me a crowbar as a wrap gift as well, because there's this crowbar that was on the art cart that Tiffany would say she'd go to get it and it wouldn't be there. And she's like, oh, God damn it, John's doing something. And she'd walk on set and sure enough, I was just beating a hole in the wall.
Well, what's next for Black Mold in terms of anything you can tell us?
At the moment, I can't say anything else, but
super secret.
Yes.
I always ask this question. It's always super secret. I get it.
I know.
But I hope we'll be one of the first to know.
Yes.
when you can say something.
Absolutely. And I will just say that people have plenty of opportunities to see this film come end of summer into the fall. So I look forward to it because this is Portland is our second screening. And so it's still very fresh in the film's life. And I'm just excited to get out and meet more people and talk about the film and just be back together with the cast and crew as much as possible.
So last thing, do you have any upcoming projects that you can tease for us?
Well, I have two scripts that are written. One, knowing what you said earlier about certain type of films that you like, I think you'd be really excited by it. Might be
horror sci-fi films
or creature feature. One of the
creature features.
And the goal for this year as well is just to, I want to write three more scripts and just have a bunch of stuff ready to go. There's nothing definitive right now, but there's plenty of stuff in the works.
Awesome. And then you also have Head Trauma Productions, and I just want to call that out for everybody if they want to keep up with what you're doing with
production
company.
I'm not great at posting on social media, and I think there's Head Trauma pages, but I haven't looked at them in years. But otherwise, my personal is just under John Pata on most platforms. And again, I don't post very much, but I am on there. So if anyone ever wants to reach out, I'm more than happy to engage.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me on Slay Away, John. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, but also for that review. I know we were emailing about it, but I was so, so pleased with your review, and I'm glad that the film connected with you. And I just appreciate you taking the time to shed some light on us.
Well, thank you so much.